Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. Me, Ty Schalter from 538, joined by Samantha Bunton of NBC Sports and Michael Shoddy of the 33rd team. It's time for this week's big show where we go long on big NFL topics. We also have a big guest for you, just like always, Jarrett Bailey, national NFL analyst who appears at Sports Illustrated and the 33rd team. He's also the host of the Pump Fake podcast. Can't wait to talk to him. But before we do, take a second right now. Pause it if you got to. Make sure you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. We go live on Key Takeaways on Monday mornings. We'll record, put it in the feed or any of our big shows because we're going to keep doing it twice a week, all off season, all year, all regular season, just like we always do. All right, guys, we are blessed here in this hard off season with some actual news to talk about. Steelers safety Minka Fitzpatrick has done a lot of bucket lists items have been checked already, drafted high, traded, all pro, pro bowl, acquired by the Steelers and now signed to a 4-year reported $73.6 million extension. According to Ian Rappaport, that includes $36 million guaranteed dollars, making him, at least for right now, the highest paid safety in the league. Shoddy, what do you think about Minka Fitzpatrick getting inked to a big deal?
So for me, this is very interesting because it was like 7 weeks ago that we're sitting there talking draft stuff and we've got, you know, some super talented safeties. Kyle Hamilton is like this super talented safety, but don't you dare draft him high because we don't draft safeties high. Like we don't talk about Bruno and we don't draft safeties or off ball linebackers high. Like those are the things we do not do. And now we're all going to sit here and applaud that Minka Fitzpatrick is getting paid just a crap ton of money. And I'm not against it. I think safety play is probably, as an offensive guy, I watch safeties more than any other position. And I really enjoy watching really talented safety play. And I think the amount of really good safeties in the NFL has shrunk by like big numbers over the past decade. And if you've got a guy like Minka Fitzpatrick, who especially can create turnovers, he's not just I'll use the baseball analogy. He's not just like letting the ball drop ahead of him and making plays to keep it from like singles to go into doubles. He is Ken Griffey Jr. like flying around, snatching that ball out of the air. And if you've got that guy, like pay that guy. So I think the Steelers are really wise to do this. I think they've now got a very clear-cut leader up front with a, you know, solid defensive line. They've got a clear-cut leader in the linebacker core, I think, with Miles Jack. Now they've got their clear-cut leader locked up in the defensive backfield with Minka Fitzpatrick locked up for the next 5 years. And I think, you know, can they rebuild the Iron Curtain? Probably not. Like it's not that era anymore, but at the same time, for a defense that was super disappointing last year and statistically was not nearly as good as maybe we expect Steelers defenses to be, I'm excited. I'm excited for Minka Fitzpatrick. I think he is one of the better safeties in the NFL, one of the best playmakers in the NFL. And, you know, I'll do the shameless plug for the 33rd team. We just wrote a really great article with, you know, Chuck Pagano weighing in, who's, you know, spent a lot of time, you know, playing against, coaching against, working against Minka Fitzpatrick, but also Mike Tannenbaum, who runs the 33rd team, who is our fearless leader, was part of the group that drafted Minka Fitzpatrick. So some good quotes from him in there as well. So this is long overdue, and I'm glad that Minka Fitzpatrick is getting paid for what has been a stellar NFL career so far.
I love your 20-year outdated baseball references. Like, I can't wait to hear which one is going to come next. But you are correct, though. It's very apt, regardless, in reference to Minka Fitzpatrick. And I completely agree with you, Shadi. This is kind of where I wanted to go with this as well, which is that I think safeties have really kind of gotten I don't want to say a bad rap. That's not exactly the right wording for it. But this idea that we don't need to prioritize this position and we don't need to pay these people. And I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but you're absolutely right. That is kind of how it's gone. And it's strange to me because maybe it's just me, but outside of the quarterback position, which I think that's the first thing everybody watches and prioritizes when you're picking apart a football game the way that we do every week. But the thing that I watch the most closely after that is the safeties, because it's what's interesting to me. And I think that regardless of interest level, it's, you know, Jarrett Bailey is, you'll hear him mention this in his interview when we talk to him about this later, that sometimes these guys are asked to wear many hats, as it were, and it becomes difficult. And it's a little bit like when guys come in as offensive linemen and a team takes them, like, think about like what happened to Cam Irving after he was drafted, where the team is like, well, we're not really sure what to do with you and we have a lot of holes, so we're going to try you out at four different offensive line positions and then wonder why you can't play any of them well. And this happens a lot with safeties too, where they're kind of just tasked with doing too many different jobs, especially when they're young and new, and Fitzpatrick a little bit more experience in that, but still I think asked to do a lot of different things. And he was, I think, kind of unfairly criticized for not doing them all perfectly as one might if one had effectively one job. So I'm glad to see somebody in this position get paid according to what I perceive their value on the field to be. And I'm really curious what the trickle-down effect of this is going to be, if any. Steelers certainly in a position where it makes sense for them to put a lot of money into this particular person, this particular position, that where it might not make so much sense for other teams. But particularly with regard to a guy like Blake Poyer, who is probably the one I'm the most interested in. But I'm curious, are we going to kind of take the stigma off the safety a little bit and pay these guys the way I think they ought to be paid?
Yeah, I think part of the thing with the safety thing is just kind of this hangover of, like, the 80s and 90s, where, you know, so much of the game is built around the running game, and you have your strong safety and your free safety, and the free safety, hey, he's way off on the right side of the screen. You can't even see the safety, so it can't be that important, right? Like, I don't know, obviously football coaches see the whole field, but when you are living in an era, you know, even 15 years ago, right? You know, Earl Thomas, Ed Reed, some of these guys changed the way defenses played, changed the way we see how defenses can align up front based on how they can play in the back. I think it's long overdue that we recognize safeties in general. And I think it's great. I think you can see in the way that, say, the Pro Football Hall of Fame voters are kind of going back and looping in all these safeties before their eligibility, you know, wraps up, because they realize, oh, these are all pro players. These are great players. These are teams that were players that were part of huge teams and huge parts of huge teams. And we just haven't recognized them for basically no reason. And now that just about every team in the league throws it significantly more often than they run, how you can cover the back end, and then, you know, how that player can play on rundowns too, makes a huge difference. Obviously, Minka Fitzpatrick comes up and makes a ton of solo tackles in the run game too. True two-way safety for me kind of goes back to just the general approach in the NFL, where when you have cap space, as the Steelers do, and the cap just went up again by a lot, and it's going to go up a lot more, and you're letting Ben's contract fall off the books, you're letting some of these old guys fall off the books, you are going to be able to rebuild in kind of whatever image you want. The difference making thing is no longer saving nickels and dimes on your second and third tier players. It's just having more first tier players. When you have Pro Bowlers, when you have all pros, when you have game changing players, you need to keep them around, and you've got plenty of money to do it. I think keeping those grade A, as A tier, those S tier players, and figuring everything else out around them is how teams are going to win now and win in the long run, because they are the team. Those are the players that give you that advantage, that make you win games. And I think ultimately that's where Tomlin and company are going to go. We're going to talk more about this. Jarrett Bailey is going to join us from, again, Sports Illustrated, the 33rd team pump fake podcast. He is a national NFL analyst, but he happens to be a Steelers guy as well. Cannot wait to pick his brain on what he thinks about the Minkah Fitzpatrick signing and lots of other topics right here on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. It's our midweek big show. We've got a big guest, Jarrett Bailey from Sports Illustrated, the 33rd team, also the host of the Pump Fake podcast and now the No Notes podcast. This is very cool. Jarrett, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you, as always, for asking me to come on. How are you?
Doing absolutely fantastic, but maybe not as well as you are. Just before we are taping this podcast, news broke that the Steelers have locked up Minkah Fitzpatrick. They're very, 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 very talented safety for the next 5 years. And he has, as they said, gotten the bag. I just finished writing for that or getting some quotes for that from the 33rd team guys. But I want to hear from the Steelers fan perspective. The defense was not so great last year. It really wasn't. And especially when Watt went down. What are your thoughts? Are there downsides to locking up a safety for this long? Is he really the piece of the puzzle in the back end that, you know, you need to build around? Obviously, Minkah's a fan favorite because he creates turnovers, but what are your feelings about how this sets them up moving forward?
Well, first of all, I'm advocating that we retire the phrase "got the bag." That's my first and foremost thing.
I'm not going to, you can read the 33rd team article if you want to figure out like who maybe said it, but I actually pulled that from a very respected NFL coach who had said that, about Minkah Fitzpatrick. So I'm absolutely stealing that. And I will say, if there's like a 60-year-old white guy using the term, and then it's being quoted by a 36-year-old white guy, you're probably right. We probably absolutely should retire this phrase.
So yeah. In terms of that, like Minkah getting the deal, it's what Steelers were kind of waiting for, Steelers fans, that is. Obviously TJ Watt got his deal last year. But ever since Minkah was acquired in 2019, I mean, he changed the look of the defense. I mean, if you remember, the Steelers defense, like throughout like the latter half of the 2010s, was bad. And the year before in 2018, I mean, it was, again, relying heavily on the offense to do, you know, to get just about all the production that they had. And defensively, they were still, you know, trying to find an identity. And I think getting Minkah on the back end helped them do that. I mean, they start off 8-5 with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, largely because that defense was incredible and Minkah was a big part of that. So paying him, I mean, it's well deserved. And I know that a lot of people were critical of him last year, especially in the first half of the season. But you know, what people don't remember is that Pittsburgh lost Mike Hilton to free agency. Steven Nelson wasn't there anymore. So they really had to ask Minkah to wear a lot of different hats on that defense. Like if you look back at the Buffalo game, like he was playing a lot of the slot duties for a good portion of time because they really didn't have a slot guy that was kind of set in stone. So while they were trying to find somebody solidified at that spot, you know, Minkah was kind of that guy. He didn't really have the ability to do his center field free ranging like he had before, because, you know, they really didn't have a guy to play that nickel spot. So once they kind of solidified that, once the secondary and the cornerback room kind of got more situated as time went on, he was back to being, you know, a more productive guy on the back end. So when he's at his best, he's one of the best safeties in the league. And the good news for Pittsburgh, I mean, they can afford to do it right now because they're basically paying like three coconuts and a bag of Doritos for their quarterback room right now. So like, they don't really have a lot of money tied up into their quarterbacks. So It looks like they're kind of going with the format that a lot of other teams have gone with over the past few years is, all right, we've got cheap quarterbacks. Let's just build a juggernaut as best we can around them and try to make the next 3 to 5 years as successful as we can.
And that's exactly where I was going with it, Jared. I'm trying to figure out what the vision for like Mike Tomlin Steelers 2.5 is. You know, the quarterback, obviously we've drafted the heir apparent. You know, you've got your bridge quarterback, at least in theory, but you look out to 2024 now, Minka joins TJ Watt. You know, Cam Hayward would be like 35, 36 at that point. A couple of offensive linemen and Najee Harris, you know, Mason Cole, that's pretty much it. Like, what do you think? Obviously, you know, this is a huge commitment to Minka in particular, but what do you think this means for the way the Steelers are building their nucleus? Is this going to be just, we're going to keep being the Steelers we've been with different names on the back of the jerseys, or is there kind of a new vision taking place for like what this defense is going to look like and what this team's going to be built around?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Minka got such a big deal, I think that says a lot about what's going to happen with Deontay Johnson. I like Deontay Johnson. I do. I think he's good. I don't think he's worth paying what he's going to want to be paid. He's not an elite one. I think he's a good one. And the fact that they, you know, they still have Chase Claypool, who's still got a few years on his rookie deal. They just drafted George Pickens and Calvin Austin as well. They brought in guys like Anthony Miller and Miles Boykin to be depth pieces. So I think that says a little bit to where they're going to go. Unless Deontay Johnson just absolutely goes off and catches like 115 passes this year and becomes like a consensus top five, top 10 receiver, I don't see him getting the deal that he's going to be looking for. And I think he'll probably sign elsewhere when the time comes. Offensive line wise, I mean, yeah, their offensive line woes were very well documented last year in terms of, all right, you know, David DeCastro got cut because he's probably going to have to retire because he's hurt. Marquise Pouncey retired. Al Villanueva went to Baltimore. So they really had to kind of really think on the fly with that. I mean, they signed Trey Turner. Dan Moore, the rookie out of Texas A&M, started at left tackle. Chuck's a core four at right tackle was very hit and miss all of last season. So, you know, bringing in James Daniels from Chicago, signing Mason Cole, I think both of them will have starting roles either at center or right guard, respectively. If I had to guess, they'll probably make Daniels the center and have Cole play right guard. And then Kendrick Green will probably play some sort of reserve role because he just wasn't good. But Kevin Dotson at the other guard spot, that's kind of their strongest offensive lineman right now. And then obviously Najee Harris, that's what the offense is going to run through, is Najee Harris and Pat Freiermuth. Like, these, it's going to be kind of like classic Steeler football almost, that they're going to really rely on the run game, the underneath passes to the tight end when, you know, all else fails. And then you've still got some studs on the outside with Pickens, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, at least for this year going forward. So can they be a team that, you know, is going to be competitive as they always are? Yes, absolutely. You know, this is a team that's coached by Mike Tomlin, still has a good nucleus defensively and a good collection of young talent on offense. It just depends on will, you know, Mitch Trubisky and or Kenny Pickett be able to play well enough to get them to, you know, be competitive and contend for a wild card spot. And in a stacked AFC, I mean, it's going to be a tough task.
And so I think that answered my Steelers question as well. So let's come back to Minka Fitzpatrick for a second, except I wanted to talk to you about this from the perspective sort of what this does to the safety market in general. This has been a position where people have been of, we'll say, disparate opinions about what people should be paid for it and how valuable these guys are to their respective teams. And, you know, you had mentioned that the Steelers can kind of afford to do this right now because the quarterback room is so cheap and because they don't have a ton of cost right now. But I'm curious as to your thoughts on, you know, do you think the rest of the league will look at this in that manner, or is this going to become market setting? Will other players assume it's market setting? What do you think this does to the safety market for the next guy who comes up for a contract rule?
Well, there's a couple guys that are going to be looking at Minka's deal and going to their respective general managers and being like, yeah, I'm going to need at least that. Jesse Bates in Cincinnati is the biggest kind of one that sticks out the most because Bengals fans have been a very public outcry and his teammates alike. They want him to get paid and he's very deserving of an extension. but they themselves, I mean, they have a good safety duo with him and Von Bell. And then you go over to Buffalo, where Jordan Poyer's contract is going to be coming up. And they arguably have the best safety duo in the NFL with him and Micah Hyde. So it's hard for teams like that who have two really good safeties, because no team in their right mind is going to tie up a lot of money into two safeties. It's going to be one or the other. Not to mention the fact that the Bengals just drafted a safety as well, and are going to pretty much have to choose, all right, is it going to be Von Bell, or are we going to extend Jesse Bates? So regardless of that, though, whomever pays those guys, I mean, I think that that's going to be kind of the benchmark on what they want to get paid. Like, it's just weird to me at this point how, like, every time a guy gets paid, we make a big deal that it's the highest in NFL history for their respective positions, because it happens every year now. So I'm not so caught up in that, because it's just become so commonplace. It was kind of like in the mid 2000s when every other year the touchdown record was broken by a running back, or the most yards was broken by a running back. So it's not as if that's like, it's not as if there's not precedent for that, because it just keeps happening. So like I said, Jesse Bates and Jordan Poyer are going to be those next two that are going to, you know, be in line for a contract. And whether they stay in Cincinnati and Buffalo respectively, I don't think Jordan Poyer is going to be in Buffalo. I would think that the Bengals will extend Jesse Bates, if that's just me guessing right now. But yeah, regardless of where they go, I think those guys are going to get kind of that market value. Now, is it going to be more than 18.4? It's definitely going to be in the ballpark, because both of those guys are fantastic. And, you know, both of their resumes kind of speak for themselves.
Okay, let's switch gears here a little bit. We've had NFL, and I suppose this has happened in other sports too recently, owners or ownership groups in the news way too often during this offseason. It's generally not anything good when you are talking about owners during the offseason. And the latest kerfuffle is out in LA. The Spanos family is eating itself. And very, very similar situation actually to what is going on with the Baltimore Orioles and the Angelos family. So just curious to get your take on this. What do you think this means? Is it going to come to anything, or is this just more kind of bad press for NFL owners in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of said it. Anytime we're talking about owners, it's never a good thing. I think that's why people try to stay away from it. But anytime something like that happens, yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to put into words what I think of this, because we do try to, you know, ignore it. And whether or not that's the right or wrong thing to do, it's one of those things that I think will eventually take care of itself. But I mean, like you said, this isn't, you know, exclusive to football. We've seen it we've seen many franchises have their own respective owner problems. But I mean, the NFL is the biggest sport in America, and their issues kind of get put more on blast. Like Dan Snyder in Washington, I feel like Dan Snyder in Washington has been on blast for the past decade and a half, and nothing seems to really come of it. So, and then I think there was something with, you know, Bob McNair and the Texans a few years ago as well. So these things like seem to kind of start off like really big stories, and then they just kind of evaporate. So we'll see what comes of it, but yeah, like I said, anytime we're talking about owners, it's never a great thing.
So another owner we've talked about recently, not that I want to stay on the ownership topic, but we've talked a lot about Stephen Ross down in Miami. And
yeah,
from that standpoint, you know, even just talking about the owners, like Stephen Ross has seemed about as publicly against Tua Tagovailoa as their starting quarterback as anyone. And some of it wasn't like super public, because it came out, you know, after the fact that he was trying to lure Tom Brady onto his yacht with, you know, some avocado ice cream or whatever it was. And now we've got a world in which everyone wants us to believe that the Dolphins are extremely excited that Tua Tagovailoa is their quarterback. So you wrote recently for me, just saying that you wrote recently about Tua and Miami. And so I wanted to just give you a chance to lay your thoughts out there. Cause I think you and I are pretty much on the same page that, you know, this is a marriage made in short-term heaven.
Yeah. I mean, everybody kind of made a big deal about, you know, they started off 1-7 last year, and then they just rattled off a trillion wins in a row. But let's kind of put into context who they beat. They beat the Ian Book led Saints. Huzzah, great job. They beat the Jets a few times. I've had to go back and see. I believe they beat Houston. Like, it's not as if they were beating the juggernauts of the NFL. And Tua, yes, he rattled off a few games in a row where he had over 70% completions. But if you look at his numbers as a whole, he's in the bottom half of the NFL in terms of how far he throws the ball downfield and intended air yards and yards per completion. Like, Tua is what he is. I think he's like a more athletic Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, can you win regular season games with Tua? Yes. They're 13-8 with him as the starter since he was drafted. But am I going to say that Miami is going to contend with the likes of everybody in the AFC West, a Baltimore team who just built a really good secondary in the offseason, and they're getting all of their guys who were on injured reserve last year back? Cincinnati, who's obviously just in the Super Bowl, Buffalo. I don't think that they are in the same tier as any of those teams. And look, I get it. Like, it's exciting to have Tyreek Hill come in. But what happens when defenses just sit on the shallow routes and say, look, you're not going to complete it to Tyreek Hill 4 yards deep and let him run for 30 more. You're going to have to beat us over the top. Good luck. And if they can't do that, then their offense is going to become very one-dimensional and they're not going to be able to move the ball. And it's going to be a very, it's going to be a quick end of the season, especially if defenses figure that out early. Now, if Tua can develop a deep ball and can make the offense more versatile, then sure, they might have a chance there, especially because their cornerbacks are very good. But they, you know, the offensive line's still suspect. They lack any sort of elite running talent. I'm very, very questioned on the Miami Dolphins. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. Not to mention the fact that we have it. I don't get why the Dolphins don't get talked about more as being just a complete and utter dumpster fire, because they just fired Brian Flores, a coach who got them to back-to-back winning seasons, which is something that they haven't done in 20 years. And they just decided to let him go. And look, McDaniel, I get that he's exciting. I get that he's funny. He's kind of like the Nick Kroll of NFL coaches. Like, everybody just seems to love him. And look, I get it. But, you know, he had one season as an offensive coordinator, you know, spent a few years as the run game coordinator in San Francisco as well. But we don't know how good he's going to be. Like, there's been so many guys in the past who've gotten so much hoopla and like credit and whatnot in the offseason. Like, that's great. You can be offseason champions all you want, but how many times have we seen offseason champions like the Browns a few years ago, like the Eagles back in 2011, who just build up, you know, solid teams on paper. And then when it comes time to put that product on the field, it just becomes, you know, a crap souffle. So with Miami, I'm very skeptical for a lot of reasons. And the biggest reason is because their quarterback just doesn't seem to have any sort of explosiveness to his game. He's like a diet Alex Smith to an extent, isn't he? Like, it's very okay. You know what? I'm very okay with taking this 5-yard completion and setting up a 2nd and 5 rather than, you know what, let's try this one-on-one ball with my elite receiver and see what happens. So like I said, if he can develop any sort of deep ball and they can have some sort of versatility to their offense, then yes, they can definitely have a chance to be competitive. Even then though, the AFC is just way too stacked for me to say, yes, Tua Tagovailoa over Justin Herbert, or Tua Tagovailoa over Denver or Baltimore, or, you know, I cannot see them being one of those 7 teams that ends up getting to the playoffs. To their benefit, they do have winnable games within the division. I think that the Patriots are going to take a decent step back. And while the Jets got better, like, I still think they're at least a year away from being like a playoff contention team. They could be that scrappy, fun team that keeps things competitive, but, you know, those are 4 winnable games for them. But, you know, the beginning of their schedule is brutal. They have a 3-game stretch at the end of the year too, where they go 3 straight road games: San Francisco, Chargers, Buffalo. Who the hell did they piss off? Like, my goodness, that's brutal. So I'm not sold on the fact that they can overcome all of that. And along with everything that's gone on in the offseason, and not to mention the fact that they spent all of the last year and a half basically telling everybody that they don't want Tua, and now we're supposed to believe how excited they are about him. They're just a giant ball of dysfunction. But since they're in Miami and have nice weather, it seems that we kind of choose to ignore that.
Jerry, we talked a little bit about it at the beginning of the podcast, just before we started recording. Tell us about, you've got a new project in the mix, the No Notes podcast. Tell me about this.
Oh, yeah. So No Notes, I hate to say, like, it's so cliche, but it's kind of just like a light bulb thing where, like, most of the time that I do shows, I don't do any prep. Like, I just kind of wing it, and it always goes well. But I was like, you know what, let's just make that a concept where I just, you know, talk to people that I you know, that I enjoy, whose work I enjoy, who I'm friends with in the business, or people who I haven't really interacted with, but I just find them fascinating. So the whole premise is that there's no notes, there's no research. We just kind of talk for a little bit, get to know one another. The first episode dropped yesterday with Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful and Fightful Select. For those who don't like professional wrestling, the best way I can describe Sean is he's basically the Adam Schefter of the professional wrestling world. He's fantastic, does incredible work. So if you're a wrestling fan, definitely go give Sean a follow on Twitter. He's someone that you should absolutely keep up with. But through an hour and a half, we hardly talked about wrestling. It was just two dudes just having fun talking about, you know, life, the business, video games, music, toy collecting. He tried to make me enjoy Doja Cat for a brief stint of time too. yeah. So it was just a whole entire thing where, you know, I want to talk to these people, but I don't want it to be, you know, because there's a million different, you know, podcasts that just focus on respective sports and whatnot. And don't get me wrong, like they're great. This show's great. This show is an awesome national NFL podcast, and I love coming on it. And I have a national podcast that I talk about. And, you know, our listeners and whatnot, they're great and everything. But I just wanted to create a new niche where, yes, you can see your favorite personalities or people that you follow on Twitter that you like, but, you know, get to know them a little bit better as well. So, you know, I think that people get to know Sean a little bit better. They get to know me a little bit better doing this as well. I'm doing one. I've got a whole lineup actually for season one. Amy Trask, former CEO of the Raiders, is going to be on episode two, and I'm really looking forward to that. And then Matt Verderama, fan-sided, Tom Hanifan, who hosts the Paydirt podcast on Penn State football, and he's the voice of Impact Wrestling. If you can't tell, I'm a really big wrestling nerd, guys. So I just keep getting
you don't say
left and right. Yeah. No, it's something that I'm not ashamed of whatsoever. It's fantastic. So he'll be on one, and then I'm actually going to do one with my father, which is something that I'm actually really excited about, because without him, this is a line of work that I probably wouldn't be in. And to be able to do something like that with him, where we just kind of talk and reminisce, I think that's going to be something really cool for me to do personally. But for anybody who like enjoys my work or has kept up with me over the past few years, you know, I talk about my dad a lot. This will be kind of the first taste that they get of, you know, us kind of chatting in a public eye. So season one is shaping out very nicely, and then lining up guests for future shows as well. So yeah, please do go give that a follow. No Notes Pod on Twitter, something that I'm really excited about and really just rushing head in with.
All right. Well, Jarrett, thanks for taking time out to talk to us. Always a pleasure catching up with you, man.
Always appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. You too. There he goes. Jarrett Bailey, national NFL analyst, appearing at Sports Illustrated and the 33rd team, host the Pump Fake podcast and the No Notes podcast. Check him out. Follow his stuff. Meanwhile, stay with us. We've got the rest of our big topics to get to right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. Great stuff from Jarrett, as always. Love to catch up with him, one of our regulars here on 3 and Out. Always love to get, and we're so glad we got to talk to him when there was Steelers news, but there isn't just Steelers news. Samantha, I think we can go a little bit more in depth. You talked about the Spanos family drama with Jarrett, but I think we can kick it around the round table too. Why don't you start us off?
First, just a quick yes or no question. The two of you, do you watch Succession?
I do not, but I think I've heard enough podcast hosts on podcasts that aren't about TV find ways to bring up Succession that I think I'm at least literate on the concept.
Okay, good. All right. So I'm hoping then that I'm looping you guys in properly on this. But yeah, so we have like real life Succession sort of going on here, you know, four children squabbling a football team. Right now it's 3-on-1, but if we follow the Succession model, that may change. We could see 2-on-2, we could see a different 3-on-1. who knows, they could all go in different directions. But it's sort of bizarre that this is coming up now. You know, we just had the sale of the Broncos, and we also have a really similar situation going on in Baltimore with the baseball team, where the children of Peter Angelos, or Orioles owner, are fighting over control of the team. There are rumors being put out that, you know, he's going to move them, which is like the greatest way to discredit your sibling's case for control of a team, right? Like, way to get the public like on your side. That guy's going to move them, which turned out to, I think, not be true in that case. But we're seeing this with the Chargers as well. So it's the one, the daughter, and then the other daughter, and both of the sons are on one side, and she is alleging misogyny towards the two sons, and I suppose the other daughter de facto for aligning with them, but saying essentially that she was pushed out. Thoughts? Does anybody, I mean, are we going like full like Succession, or I mean, I guess you could even throw a Game of Thrones analogy in here and be like, I don't know, like, who comes out on top of this? Like, it's 3-on-1, that's pretty bad odds. And the three is, I believe, the current controlling interest. Like, does she have any shot here? Do you think there's anything credible to what she's saying? And most importantly, is this actually going to impact the team at all? Or is this just the kind of like gross stuff we wish we didn't know, but that is kind of inevitable when you're dealing with these sorts of people in ownership groups?
So there's a like split mind here with me, because like liberal, you know, open-minded Mike really wants to just believe women. And it's not shocking to me that, hey, there's misogyny in the ranks of an organization like the NFL, where it's mostly middle-aged rich white dudes. Like, that's shocking. But at the same time, there's also like journalist Mike that's like, but I need to see some more receipts. I need to like see evidence before I just jump forward and be like, well, Dean Spanos is a lech. Like, you know, I'm of both minds here. I think there are 20,000 reasons why most Chargers fans would love to see Dean Spanos have to give up that team. Like, that's sort of where I'm ended up leaning on this. Like, when I heard that news, I was like, oh, like, he's been a pretty bad owner. And I know Ty has like his whole ownership doesn't really matter take, and I almost fully agree with that. But just Dean Spanos has been like a really not great owner of the Chargers wherever they've been. And the fact that they don't have really a fan base anymore, it's a very weak, not just even market for them, but it's just a very weak brand right now in the NFL. This might be the best thing. And I'm not saying this because I think he's a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad person, because I don't know. I'm not there. And I don't want to not believe the grumblings on the other side, or the rumblings on the other side, but I also don't want to start kicking him out of the NFL before I know those things for sure. But at the same time, I sort of feel the same way that I feel about Dan Snyder, kind of the same way I feel about Stephen Ross. Like, I would love to see new blood in some of these franchises that have just been, you know, the gang that can't shoot straight for years.
Yeah. And I was, Shadi, you took the words out of my mouth in terms of like, okay, yes, believe women, and I don't even, you know, how many receipts do we need to see like, oh, did like a big giant rich NFL owner guy was a misogynist and sexist, and, you know, would rather have one of his sons take it versus his daughters or any other female relatives? Like, none of that surprises me. It doesn't. The thing with the Spanos family is, you know, we just spent a couple of weeks ago talking about how great an ownership family the Bolins were, and how great Pat Bolin was for the team, for the city, did it the right way, was financially unbelievably successful, not in just turning revenue, generating revenue, building new stadiums and keeping it in the city, but also in terms of like, you know, he bought the team for like $78 million and 40 years later sells it for $4.5 billion. Awesome. Okay, well, all of that said, still could not navigate the succession mess. Still could not get the bickering kids in line. Family still crab bucketed each other all the way up into, well, I guess we'll just have to like sell it to a trust and the trust will have to sell the team. The same thing happened in Tennessee. Same things happened in other places. You know, these family parent to child, child to child successions worked for almost 100 years in the NFL, but you're no longer talking about teams worth 100 million or 200 million that are owned by families that have other businesses on the side. You're talking about, this is the family business and it's worth billions. And the only way to tap into it is to sell it for those billions. And the Spanos family is not the Bullen family and the Chargers are not the Broncos. And the fact that they could not get a stadium built in San Diego after like 20 straight years of trying is a pretty big indictment. The fact that they got just absolutely shanghaied in the LA negotiations and ended up completely bereft and playing in StubHub and going to a market in LA that nobody had any interest in. They knew they had no interest in. They knew they weren't going to draw people. Now they're going to be second banana there forever and ever, while the Raiders, who spent just as long trying to build a new stadium, now have like the crown jewel of the league for at least the moment in Allegiant Stadium. And you know, they're winning and everything else. And Mark Davis somehow looks like a genius. And it's like, Mark, it's the one thing to get outplayed by Stan Kroenke, right? It's one thing to get just rooked by one of the richest owners in the league who owns like 8 other teams in 4 other leagues in 3 other countries. And then for Mr. Bullcut to just like come out on top and you be last on the merry-go-round, it's just a terrible look. And it's a bummer because the Chargers are a great brand identity. They have a great set of uniforms, really great young players, lots of reasons to love to watch the Chargers play right now, but they would be better off in any other hands. And I feel like we're just going to end up with the same thing with the kids suing and suing each other until some bylaw gets triggered or some fuse runs out and poop, now we got to sell it. And, we're talking oil barons or whoever all else to come in and right the ship.
Yeah, this is how all succession plots end, right? With the kids running out of money to pay the lawyers until the oligarch swoops in. So great job, everyone. But I'm with you guys on the whole accusations of misogyny. This is not exactly the kind of situation that I'm talking about when I say you should believe women. But the reason I'm struggling here is because, like you said, we haven't heard any kinds of concrete allegations. We also have a woman on the other side of this. And also it's, you know, it sounds a lot like, well, technically like every one of these that we've ever seen, where whoever is on the outside flings about all kinds of accusations. I mean, we have in the Orioles situation that's going on right now at the same time as this, it's two men, they're brothers. So you can't exactly accuse someone of misogyny. So what do? Well, you say the other person's going to move the team. So to me, this is, you just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. And it's not that it's impossible. I am sure that, well, as a woman who works adjacent to the NFL, I can tell you that there's loads of misogyny floating around. But is that what kept her from controlling this team? I don't think we can say that definitively. What I do think we can say definitively is that this family is not good for the Chargers. You mentioned the inability to build the stadium and then the move down to LA. We talked a lot last season about how, you know, LA has a lot of problems drawing a crowd just in general. And even the Rams had trouble with this there. It is just not a town where they do particularly well with live football audiences. But the Chargers, I mean, every time somebody plays a visiting game there, the visiting team, even if it's a team from the opposite coast, from a mid to small market, represents better in the stands than the Chargers do. So, well, I think they're a good brand in terms of they have good players, that they have maybe a good coach. Jury's still out on that. We like the uniforms, blah, blah. They don't exactly have like a stellar history to latch on to. In terms of football legacy, they're actually kind of thin and they haven't been able to build up anything like that. And because of the mismanagement by this family, they haven't been able to sort of cement themselves in other ways, certainly didn't endear themselves to the public in San Diego. And I don't think they're going to be able to do that in LA either. So, you know, regardless of who's at fault or who's in charge, perhaps the best thing that could happen, aside from the sale to the oligarch, because I think we have all agreed over the last couple of weeks when discussing this, that is bad and we don't want that, but that you're absolutely right, Ty. They would be better off in pretty much anyone else's hands.
I will say, I'm pretty sure during that episode, I know I dropped the Chargers as, if not my top option, as one of my options.
Yes.
So
yes.
I kind of feel like I willed this into existence and you guys should like be scared of me now because...
Well, didn't you say you wanted to move the team? That was your whole thing. I mean, you could move them, like Los
yes,
Angeles,
like, but also everywhere, like every 3 years. Like we're going to Portland, then Juneau, then like Portugal. It's Brother Loves Traveling Salvation Show, but with Joey Bosa.
Just go bring it back to the roots, man. Just go full barnstorming. No stadium.
I love. Yeah.
Just 17 away games.
Well, Deep Thanos couldn't build one, so I'm just going to take that next step and not need
there that. There you go.
You can play in fields and stuff, like cornfields, like real barnstormers.
I was going to say, do you guys remember after they made the move and then they released that like new logo that literally looked like someone with the last name Spanos pulled up the Los Angeles Dodgers interlocking LA logo and made the one bit of the A end in a lightning bolt. Do you remember that?
Oh, I sure do. Yep.
I still can't believe that happened. I was like, who is at the tiller right now? Who is making decisions? Who like is the league noticing that like one of their 32 League of Billionaires franchises is just like cropping up logos in paint 3D and like violating trademarks out here? Like where are we going with this?
I thought of this recently when the Guardians changed their name to the Guardians and they made that goofy baseball with like the Hermes wings on it logo, but if you turn it on the side it just looks like Chief Wahoo. Like you can literally drop the outline of Chief Wahoo onto the top of that logo and they're an exact match. And you're like, what are you guys doing? Now, at least in that case, you're stealing from yourself. But I mean, it was the first thing I thought of was that goofy faux Dodger Spanos logo. When I saw that, I was like, oh, we're doing this again. Cool.
Listen, $5 on Upwork does not get you what it used to.
Okay. Well, it has been a fantastic show. Got into a lot of great stuff. Talked to a great guest, Jarrett Bailey. Always great to have him on. Make sure you're following him at Jay Bailey NFL. No Notes Pod, I think it is, on Twitter. Check it out. He's all over the place. Of course, we are all over the place. We are at 3OutPod on Twitter, at 3OutPod on Instagram, and at 3OutPod.com on the internet. We are super excited to keep doing this for you guys. Make sure you like, rate, and review. We need a new Apple podcast review. Somebody go out there and give us 5 stars. We do 5-star quality work. We've been doing it for a long time. We're going to keep doing it for you. Make sure you're subscribed and tune in next week. We're doing 2 shows, just like we always do every week, right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.